Welcome to episode 1 of Making 50 Shades of Dave, with me, writer and producer, David Lee. Today we'll be meeting our first cast member, Alan Lear, who will bring to life the uncharming and unflattering boss of Bicknell Radio, Declan Eveson. It's good to have you here, Alan. Now, without giving too much away, can you please give us a little bit of an insight to the character that you'll be playing, please?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I play the radio station boss who's going to be in charge of the lead characters. And basically, my place in the script is to provide a bit of conflict to keep people motivated. And I think one of my favourite things about that one as a character is that, you know that annoying thing actors say, they go, oh, this character goes on such a journey, such an interesting emotional journey. I don't, I'm just a bastard, it's fantastic. and I just get to kind of mix people's emotions up and then walk away and leave them to handle the fallout. So it's a lovely little cameo role. And it's actually quite interesting because one of the things you've said to me is that you love the way I brought a kind of arrogance to the role, and that is my defence mechanism. That's how I handle people I don't like, is that I become, I move further back in my throat, become more upper register. I've got a law degree. What do you know? So it's a great opportunity to bring something of myself to the role.
And that's why I chose you for this part, because I think, you know, you will be fantastic.
Thank you.
So I hope you don't mind me saying.
No.
You've struggled yourself with mental health issues, and most listening to this will already know that 50 Shades of Dave does have some challenging issues in it itself. Could you tell us a little bit more about your experiences with mental health issues?
Yeah, absolutely. As everybody who knows me knows, I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I spent a couple of decades drinking to excess, and it cost me relationships and jobs, and I've got a criminal record, which doesn't go with the accent, I'm aware. But I was very lucky in that I had a very supportive family, and I've got a very supportive partner who's now my wife, and I found, Eric and my wife found Rural Ways Recovery, who were extremely effective in helping get me into sobriety. That's the thing about addiction, is that it's often linked to other mental health problems, and it masks them. A lot of formal treatment, like your GPs, can't actually help you with other mental health issues if you're in chaotic addiction, because it gets in the way. It's all anybody can see, it's all they can treat. So I have fairly minor depression, which is sort of an underlying cause for my alcoholism. But a lot of the people I've met through addiction services have serious problems. Not necessarily mental health problems, but serious problems in their past. Awful childhoods, various abuse of all sorts, broken homes. A lot of them were never properly schooled because their parents just didn't care enough, or their parent didn't, or they didn't have a primary carer. So there's people who've had incredibly tough lives in the addiction services. And as somebody from a relatively privileged background, you can feel something of a fraud going in there and saying, I've got the same problems as you. But the wonderful thing about addiction is it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care what your station is in life, or what creed you espouse, or what culture you belong to. It will have you. As was proved elegantly by my own GP, who told me there was nothing wrong with me, and then was struck off for crashing his car into a tree while drunk. So that's a little bit about my struggles and my background. And the reason I wanted to come to this production, apart from the fact that the character just looks like great fun to play, is we're all well aware now, I think, that suicide issues amongst men are extremely prevalent. I think the figure is something like one in four men attempt suicide. There's four times as many women. Yeah, as many men commit suicide as women, isn't it? Edit that out. Four times as many men as women complete suicide. So that, you know, it's obvious it's a pandemic in our society, and we're looking for causes for this, and you know, it's things like toxic masculine attitudes, which tell us to stamp down on our feelings and hide them from the world because it's not manly to share them with people and what have you. And you know, that sort of cultural conditioning, which we probably all know is silly, but which nevertheless takes an incredible amount of will to overcome because it's just so deeply ingrained in us. And I think raising awareness of these issues, and more importantly, almost raising awareness of where you can go to for help with these issues, it is an incredibly important thing to do. So I'm incredibly proud to be associated with a production that's doing just that.
Excellent, yeah. And most of the, in fact, all of the cast that I've put into place here have some sort of affinity with you know, mental health issues. And what's interesting about what you'll bring to the character is that the others realise that they have these issues, whereas your character wonderfully portrays perhaps someone who hasn't come to terms with these issues. Maybe he doesn't have them, I think he does, but he's masking them, and I can't wait for you to for you to play that.
You know, mental illness of all kinds is incredibly prevalent in our society. I think the statistic is somewhere between 20 and 25% of all adults will experience a mental health crisis at some point during their lives. The figure of people who have some sort of underlying latent or low-level mental illness that will not manifest as a crisis but will nevertheless affect them is presumably much higher than that. So I think you're absolutely right. Certainly something has gone wrong in this character's background or his development or in his own head that makes him such an incredible prick. But I look forward to finding out what that might be.
You've had such an interesting career to date. Well, I think you do. What would you say is your highlight or highlights, and where do you see yourself going from here? What's the plan?
I would be very hard pressed to say I've had any kind of career at all, let alone an interesting one. So thank you for that. I've been very lucky with a couple of things. Many years ago, I played Richard Rich in a production of Man for All Seasons here on the Wirral, which is the part that was immortalised in the definitive film version by John Hurt. And it's a lovely part. This kind of venal, cynical young man who, in reality, went on to outlive all of the great characters in that historical period, purely by being effectively a sort of 16th century Tony Blair, in that he had no discernible principles or convictions at all. Yeah. He just leant with the prevailing wind, and he survived to be 70 while in Henry VIII's cabinet, while everyone around them was getting their heads cut off. So I was lucky enough many years later to actually meet John Hurt and briefly have a chat to him about the character. And of course, he completely transferred my understanding of the character, and sadly I'm now too old to do it again properly. But he always had this wonderful empathy for the characters he played, and he could always see what vulnerabilities drove them to their actions, which is one of the reasons I think that his Caligula in I, Claudius is so remarkably powerful, because everybody else would have played him as an evil man, and then Hurt portrays him as being plagued by a disease or a mental illness or a functional illness, like a brain tumour perhaps, that drives his erratic, his incredibly erratic and even barbarous behaviour. That was an incredibly valuable portrayal, especially for the time. But I think the absolute highlight has to be last year's Edinburgh Fringe, when I went up to the Stand One Comedy Club, which is something of a holy grail for comedians. Something of a mecca, I should say, for comedians, because it's not like the holy grail, because it does exist and you can't get there. But it's a wonderful venue. It's played by all the greatest comedians, Stuart Lee and Gavin Webster and all sorts of people. And we did an improvisation show for a week. I was partnered with Tony Slattery. I was incredibly lucky. And we had guests like Mike Shane and Mitch Benn and Andy Zaltzman coming on and improvising with us. And it was an unbelievably successful Edinburgh comedy show in that we broke even financially the first year we went up there, which is unheard of. You know, the most famous comedians don't break even in Edinburgh unless they're selling enormous stages. So it was not only incredible fun, but I was very lucky that I've not been subsequently remortgaging my house to pay for it. So that's been a real, that was a real delight. That's one I'll take with me to the grave, I think.
Excellent. So would you consider John Hurt then to be the pinnacle of your profession? Would you say that he's up there, or who else?
Sir John Hurt is one of the greats, undoubtedly. Not just because he was a fantastic actor, but because of the social impact that he had with some of his roles. You know, if you look at him playing Quentin Crisp in, in New York, the Naked Seven Surfers, the adaptation of Crisp's own diaries. I think, despite being a straight man, I think single-handedly did more to raise the profile of the LGBTQ community, as we now call it, into the British consciousness, at least, than any activist, probably, maybe the exception of Peter Thatcher, has achieved. And we get great films like Pride, where established Hollywood stars like Bill Nighy are happy to be associated with this sort of thing. And that is all, I would argue, part of the chain of events that John Hurt put in motion when he portrayed Quentin Crisp. And he had this history of portraying underdogs and alienated people, you know, with his portrayal of John Merrick and the Elephant Man and that sort of thing. So he was an ambassador for a maxillofacial surgery unit out in Africa called Project Hurrah, that's based in Ethiopia, that does facial surgeries on children who are born with malformations in their facial structures, and huge tumours and misaligned jaws and incredible hair lips and what have you, that they simply can't afford to have repaired in Africa, obviously. And he was an ambassador for that, because they reached out to him over the Elephant Man. So, he took on these incredibly challenging roles that Quentin Crisp, again, at the time, a lot of actors would have shied away from, homosexuality not long having been legalised in this country, I think, when he did it. And he brought this incredible vulnerability and a stark realism to the roles that a lot of actors of the period weren't able to bring to screen presentations because they were theatrically trained. And theatre and screen are two very different forms of acting, because theatre is a lot less nuanced and a lot less subtle, because you've got to reach the back rows with it. Whereas television allows you to be very managed and controlled and to perform everything in sort of micro expressions almost. And you know, it's a great actor who can strike the two and do them both very well.
Excellent. So the production itself holds up a mirror to society, and it asks us all whether we're all doing enough to help those who come to us for help, or if you're made aware of somebody who needs help in our community, in our society. Maybe this has already happened for you, and maybe it will in the future. So, if somebody came to you asking for help, crying out for help, with your knowledge of what it's like to need that support. What would be your best bit of advice for anyone that came to you or was struggling to help or to ask for help? What would you say to them, or what would you do?
Right. Okay. Well, a bit of advice I've given to a few people who approached me for help with addiction problems. This is going to sound like an incredible cliche, but bear with me because there is kind of a tender to it. The first thing you need to do is talk about it. And by that, I don't necessarily mean talk about it to somebody else. Because I know full well there are people who have social anxiety disorders, and, you know, agoraphobia, and or trust issues who say, well, it's all very well saying reach out, but it's not that bloody simple. You don't have to. That's not a first step. The first step is talking about it to yourself.
Yeah.
And when I say talk about it to yourself, I mean physically talk about it. Do it in the shower or somewhere where you're not embarrassed to be talking to yourself, but speak it out loud. Because naming the demon is the first step to killing it. And you will find, because I found, that concerns and worries and anxieties that you have that are enormous in your head, where they're milling around inchoate in these vast dark clouds, become smaller and more manageable when you nail them down into the form of words. The very act of putting words around the problem helps delineate the perimeter of the problem. And that's how you can go about then tackling. We're fortunate to live in an age where it's possible to access a lot of information and support online, which means you don't have to look another person in the eye and talk about it. So if you do have anxiety disorders of that nature, it's not a lost cause. There are ways of going about seeking help without having to get out and socialise with people, because I know full well that's an incredibly difficult step. When I was in the later days of my drinking, people say that they drink to help cope with anxiety. If you're drinking every day to excess, the anxiety that will give you is enormous. There would be days when a brown envelope would come through my, or even a white envelope would come through my door, my postbox. I would look at it and go, "What? No, I can't handle that today. Mm-hmm. That's a problem for tomorrow. I can't. Give me palpitations just thinking about it." You know, so. There are definitely people out there who couldn't take that, call that a first step, reaching out to somebody else, because you have to build up to be strong enough to do that. I understand that, I do. But the first thing you need to do is analyse the problem for yourself, and that means speaking it aloud or writing it down and getting a handle on exactly what it is you're struggling with. And in answer to the preamble to that question, no, we clearly aren't doing enough for people with mental health issues, because the ideologically led Tory government austerity programme has cut hundreds of millions of pounds from mental health and from social care, and then, a couple of weeks ago, had the cheek to put a green light up on Downing Street and say, oh, we're highlighting mental health issues. Well, thanks a fucking bunch.
Alan, thank you so much for joining me today. You can catch Alan himself as Declan Eveson in 50 Shades of Dave, premiering on the all major podcast outlets on September 16th, 2019. But we're going to actually see the character in the flesh before then. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, well, with the aid of Real Comedy Club, we're running a comedy festival in Real, the 4th to the 6th of July this year. It's going to be headlined by Tony Slattery from Whose Line Is It Anyway and Kingdom and The Crying Game and all that sort of thing. And we've got a host of brilliant performers from around the UK and from abroad, actually. So we're really looking forward to it. And we thought it would be nice if on the first day of the festival we could open with a trailer for 50 Shades of Dave. So what we're hoping to do, if we can corral all us cast members together, is do a live performance of some of the less spoilery scenes from a few of the early episodes and give people a taster and hopefully intrigue people into coming and listening to the whole podcast. And there are so many comedians who support mental health issues, having had mental health issues themselves, or you know, knowing people who have. It's very well discussed in the comedy community, and you'll often find comedians coming out and doing things for Mind and you know, other mental health charities. So we think it's a good fit that we'll take some of the funnier parts of the script, we'll put them on live, and we'll really make a day of it.
It sounds amazing. I can't wait to be a part of it as well. So thank you so much for today.
Thank you.
And we'll
see. Sorry for saying fuck.
That's okay. There's many fucks. Many, many fucks. So in terms of... if only that were true. So next time we'll be meeting more cast members. So thanks very much for listening. See you soon.
Thank you. Goodbye.